Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, for today, Sunday, April 3rd. Thank you guys for tuning in tonight. Just wanted to let you guys know that if you have a comment or a question, you can give us a call at 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. Tonight, we have beauty news for you, and we have we're chatting about a couple issues that we feel are relevant to the beauty industry. I want to send a big shout out to Natasha Nichols. She's a makeup artist out of the Miami area, and she was here today, or this weekend rather, in Atlanta. And we all met up this afternoon, early evening, and just wanted to give her a big shout out. Thank you for spending part of your day with us today. I'm going to turn it over to Denise, who has beauty news.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. For those of you in the Atlanta area who may have, flown in or driven into the Atlanta area this past weekend for the PMAC conference here in Atlanta, the Professional Makeup Artists Conference, give us a call and let us know what you thought, what you learned at the conference. You can call us at 914-803-4399. Be sure to dial a 1 if you would like to speak with us. Or you can tweet us on Twitter at @beauty_talk. Again, that's @beauty_talk. And for those of you who are planning to make the trip to New York City this weekend, be sure to check out Makeup Artist Magazine. They're going to be at booth number 213. That's at IMATS New York, April 8th through the 10th at Pier 94. For more information, you can go to imats.net. That's imats.net. And again, that's the 8th through the 10th. The 8th, that Friday, being the pro night, and the 9th through the 10th, Saturday and Sunday. I believe the show starts at 10 a.m. 9 a.m. on Saturday, and it goes to 5 p.m., and then on Sunday, the show will start at 10 a.m. going to 5 p.m. Again, for more information, you can go to imats.net. And I was asked by someone to repeat a little of the information about the Premier Day Spa that I've been focusing on the past couple of weeks here on Beauty Talk. And again, Premier Day Spa, it's taking place June 4th through 6th, and it's going to be co-locating with Premier Orlando. It's the beauty industry's most important show, delivering the education you need to succeed. This show is for beauty industry professionals and students only. I will repeat, this show is for beauty industry professionals and students only. It is not open to the public. And again, that's June 4th through 6th. In Orlando, Florida, at the Orlando Orange County Convention Center. And of course, you're going to have all education on makeup, skincare, aesthetics. There's going to be some hair education. Some classes are free, some classes and seminars are free, and there will be some paid education as well. And let me give you a phone number and a website to get more information for that and to register. The phone number would be 800-335-7469, and the website is premierdayspa.biz. Again, it's premierdayspa.biz, and the phone number is 800-335-7469. If you register by April 23rd, you will save $20 off of the show price per day. Again, register by April 23rd and save $20 off the show price. And the times of that show will be Saturday, June 4th. The education floor will be open from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the exhibit floor is not open on that Saturday. On Sunday, June 5th, the education floor will be open from 9 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. And the exhibit floor will be open from 9 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. And on Monday, June 6th, the education floor will open up from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the exhibit floor will open up from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. So keep in mind, if you show up on Saturday, the exhibit floor will not be open, on Saturday to make any purchases. You will only have the education portion of the show available from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m.
All right. And
you have your PBA update?
Yep, I'm here with your PBA update, and PBA is a Professional Beauty Association. And one of the first things I wanted to mention, I think you just mentioned the Premier Orlando show.
Yes.
Or you mentioned the spa, Premier Spa show, which
it's
will
all,
coexist
it's all
with
of the above. Yeah,
right.
All of the above.
So just another reminder, Premier Orlando is June 4th through the 6th, and they are offering PBA members discounted tickets. So make sure you go to the website, probeauty.org, to get your discounted tickets for Premier Orlando if you are a PBA member. If you're not a PBA member, you can also go to probeauty.org to join the association. July 23rd through 26th is PBA Beauty Week in Las Vegas. So get your reservations for your hotel reservations for that now. But again, it's July 23rd through 26th. It's PBA Beauty Week. It's a week full of beauty information, education, products, you name it. And it's taking place again this year in Las Vegas. Save the date for the International Salon and Spa Expo in 2017. That's January 28th through 30th, 2017. And that takes place in Long Beach, California. Again, it's the International Salon and Spa Expo, January 28th through 30th in 2017. So you have plenty of time, but save the date. PBA is offering a publication called The Business of Beauty. It's PBA's Salon and Spa Guide to Compensation. The guide is available to PBA members for $50. And for, I'm sorry, dropped the phone. Also, it's available to e-members and non-members for $100, but again, to PBA members for $50. The PBA Compensation Guide is a salon, it's salon compensation guide that where PBA has chosen to highlight the most common compensation models, including straight commission with service charges, team-based pay, salary, and salary plus commission. So because of the fact that salon compensation has evolved over the years in different types and forms, they've created this Salon and Spa Guide to Compensation. So the PBA Compensation Guide has been developed as a resource for understanding some of the compensation options and models many salons and spas are using. It has been designed as a freelance tool to assist the reader in determining which type of salon spa business model would be most appropriate for him and her, and to increase the basic understanding of salon spa operations. So again, for PBA members, it's $50, and for e-members and non-members, it's $100. It's the beauty of business. Okay, and then PBA will be announcing their NAHA finalists in May, and that's going to take place May 18th at 1 p.m.
I can't wait for that.
Right, and the NAHA is the North American Hairstyling Awards. for 2016. They'll be announcing the winners then. And then Tabitha Coffee is back with something. PBA has joined forces with Tabitha Coffee, and PBA is excited to announce a new partnership with Tabitha Coffee's Industry, which is a free online community available to both beauty industry professionals and beauty-loving non-professionals. With the November 2016 presidential election right around the corner, the partnership between industry and PBA will use social media to educate and activate the industry. In addition to focusing on the 2016 presidential election, PBA and industry will also discuss the importance of registering to vote, how voting directly relates to protecting industry licensure, and why it is imperative more industry members get involved and ensure their voices are heard at all levels of government. And that is so, so important. Beauty professionals would be surprised how it would make a difference in their industry if they, one, got out and voted, and two, paid a lot of attention and got involved in local government and speaking up and making your voice heard when it comes to certain issues. You know, and that licensure issue is a big thing that we talk about often here on the show. PBA advocates for the rights of every member and is dedicated to tracking, introducing, and responding to legislation at both the state and federal levels with potential to affect the beauty industry. Industry is committed to providing users with the knowledge, tools, and skills to transform the way they approach beauty. Tabitha and her co-founders are dedicated to elevating the skill level of the everyday hairdresser by providing quality education and encouraging inspiration and ensuring non-professionals get the right information and right suggestions from the people who know beauty best, the pros. Oh my God, that is so important. So stay tuned for the launch of Industry's first video. And if you need more information besides the probeauty.org website, you can also go on Facebook on the Professional Beauty Association page, or you can go to Facebook on the Industry online page, and that's INDUSTRIE online. So it's Industry, INDUSTRIE online. And that is
and
it
I would like
from
to,
people.
I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying that is it from PBA.
Okay, I just wanted to briefly just list some of the nominees for the Daytime Emmy Awards, the 2016 Daytime Emmy Awards. The National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences has announced the nominees for the 43rd Annual Daytime Creative Arts Emmy Awards. The awards, which honor achievements in daytime broadcast production, will take place April 29th at the Westin Bonaventure Hotel and Suites in Los Angeles. Here are the nominees in the makeup categories. Outstanding Makeup, The Ellen DeGeneres Show, which is syndicated. Jeanette Ostergaard is the guest makeup. David DeLeon is host makeup. R.L. Stine's Monsterville, Cabinet of Souls, is a Netflix show. There's a long list of makeup artists, so I'll just probably just mention just the top probably five or so. You have Debbie Lalieve. She's a head makeup artist. Todd Masters, head makeup artist. Mike Fields, key makeup artist. Felix Fox, key makeup artist. Holland Miller, key makeup artist. Chris DeVitt, makeup artist. Harlow McFarlane, makeup artist. And I'll stop there because, again, I said that's a long list. The Real, which is a syndicated show. Melanie Mills, hey, Melanie, head makeup artist. Glenn Allen, makeup artist. You have Motoko Clayton, makeup artist. Eva Kim, makeup artist. Uzmi Kravosky, makeup artist. And you have Keish Winkler-Smith, makeup artist. Then there's The Talk for CBS. You have Jude Alcala, makeup artist. Stephanie Cozart-Burton, makeup artist. Michelle Duario, makeup artist. Del McDonald, makeup artist. Anne-Marie Oliver, makeup artist. And Gabby Pascua, makeup artist. And then you
Stephanie
Cozart-Burton.
No, I was just going to say that Stephanie Cozart-Burton is already an Emmy winner. She just also happens to be the wife of LeVar Burton.
Oh, nice. Okay. You have The View, which is an ABC show. You have Rebecca Borman, makeup artist. Lynette Broom, makeup artist. And Karen DuPiche, makeup artist. an outstanding makeup for a drama series, The Bold and the Beautiful. Now we're getting to our soap operas, the ones that are left. The Bold and the Beautiful, CBS. You have Christine Johnson, key makeup artist. Leilani Baker, makeup artist. Allison Carey, makeup artist. Chris Escobosa, makeup artist. And Toby Lamb, makeup artist. That's all for The Bold and the Beautiful. For Days of Our Lives, NBC. You have Nikki Chalace, head makeup artist. Deidre Decker, makeup artist. Jeremy Swan, makeup artist. And Nina Wells, makeup artist. For General Hospital, one of my favorites, ABC, you have Donna Messina, head makeup artist, Angela Ackley, makeup artist, Caitlin Davison, makeup artist, and Bobby Roberts, makeup artist. And then for another favorite, The Young and the Restless, which is a CBS show, you have Patty Denny, head makeup artist, department head. You have Robert Bolger, makeup artist, Kathy Jones, makeup artist, Laura Schaefer Jones, makeup artist, Marlene Mason, makeup artist, and Kelsey McGraw, makeup artist. The award ceremony will not be televised following unsuccessful negotiations for show sponsorship. So, again, that award show will not be televised. But coming in September, though, you'll have the Primetime Creative Arts Emmy Awards that will be announced. But the nominations for that show will be announced on July 14th. So good luck to all of those makeup artists who were nominated.
Absolutely.
So I have a couple of topics that I wanted to talk about tonight. The first one is based on something that I saw on social media, which was on Facebook. Basically, it was in the Facebook group In My Kit. And the question asked, what brands do you feel are shading foundations correctly for darker skin clients? Again, I'll repeat that. What brands do you feel are shading foundations correctly for darker skin clients? So basically, who's making the best shades out there for dark skin? And I saw, I'm sorry?
No, I was saying that's the basic question they're asking, that you're asking.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, I've seen tons of responses. I mean, naming so many brands. And when I see all of these brands, you know, most of them you find in the department stores.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see the names of the brands, I'm thinking, okay, they just jumped on board, okay, and they just jumped on board, and their colors aren't necessarily correct, you know. So I just felt like people were throwing out brands that they knew had darker colors for darker skin tones, but not necessarily answering the question correctly. Again, the question asks, what brands do you feel are shading foundations correctly for darker skin clients? And another thing that I want to ask about that question is, are people responding based on what they know to be true, or are they responding just based on, oh, they have foundation for dark skin, they have foundation for dark skin? Or are you just throwing brands out there because you know they have foundations for dark skin, or do you know that these actual foundations actually really work? Because, I mean, I saw so many different brands, and I'm going to pull up some of the responses here now.
Well, let me just say, I know that some people are probably shouting out brands. There are some brands that are just, you know, like fan favorites, you know, and a lot of people, you know, go to these brands because of its popularity, and they're trying those colors. And a lot of times people are trying them on them, you know, because you know how some artists will try products on themselves before, you know, testing it on their clients. So a lot of times they're trying it on themselves. They're probably not going out buying the full range.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be, a little of haven't really tried all of it, but just tried one color, and because it worked on them, they're going to give it a thumbs up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily purchasing the full range and trying it on other people before giving their stamp of approval.
Right. And, you know, and then most of them, my biggest problem, and I'll be honest, my biggest problem with some of the responses was simply for the fact that most of these brands, 98-99% of these brands, are not brands by African-Americans for African-Americans, or not brands that are by a woman of color, whether it's African-American, Latino, whatever, for, you know, women of color. They weren't developed by a woman of color for women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
You know, it's. I know that most of these brands are jumping on the bandwagon simply because they know that there's a need out there. The need has been around for tons of years, but they see that makeup artists and women of color are buying these products for themselves and for their clients. And it's a thing that's, you know, it's a continuous growth. So now these brands feel like, yes, we must follow suit. We must add these colors to our line because now we know that people are going to actually buy them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a brand like Bobbi Brown has had these colors in her line from the beginning of time. So where were the
right.
other brands? You know, MAC has had these right. Colors in their lines from the beginning of their existence. So where, you know, where have all the other brands been?
Well, do you mind sharing some of the responses?
Yes, I'm trying to pull that up now. So.
Okay. I'm curious to know what some of the other brands that people, what were some of the brands that people were shouting out?
Oh, you pick a line and it's here.
Oh,
it's here.
So did anybody say Iman?
Yes, there were a few Imans.
Black Opal.
I'm trying to look up on my, my actual cell phone. Trying to do two things at one time, actually. Okay, here we go. Let's see. Yes, Iman was mentioned. Black Opal was mentioned. I actually mentioned our line, Illusions Cosmetics, as well as Black Opal. I did not mention Iman because Iman has changed so much. Back when Iman was like sole owner of the brand, the line was perfect. Now that she was bought out by, who bought Iman? I forget which major brand bought Iman, but it's just not the same anymore. So I didn't actually mention that one. But of course, we had some AJ Crimson, Lancome, Makeup Forever. I'm not exactly sold on Makeup Forever's line for women of color. To be totally honest with you, a lot of the darker colors in Makeup Forever work better to me than the lighter colors. But a lot of the darker colors, I find them to have more red in them than yellow. And so for
right.
some women... For some darker women, they just don't really work color-wise. They're not exactly the best, but a lot of them are really great. So we have, of course, like I said, Lancome, Black Opal, Iman, Max Studio Fix, Motives for Lala. And I haven't seen the full brand of Motives for Lala. I know they work for a medium-toned woman of color. RCMA, I'm not exactly, and I'm a big fan of RCMA, and I use it a lot. Depends on which, if you're talking about Vincent Kehoe palette, yes, a lot of those colors work. If you're talking about just the true RCMA palette, a lot of those dark colors don't work. You have CoverGirl's Queen Collection, Black Up. That's another brand not invented by a woman of color. I find a lot of the colors in Black Up tend to be too red as well. You have L'Oreal Truth Match. That was mentioned. Clinique, Revlon.
But that True Match, I'm trying to remember, how far does that go?
I'm not sure. Someone mentioned Arbonne, Tet Cosmetics. Someone says Tet Cosmetics has never disappointed. But I don't really see. Someone does go into a little bit about, okay, let me just read this one. I've just got into Makeup Forever HD Sticks through getting a few lighter shades for my kit. There's nowhere near me where I can try before I buy. I like to get more through to the darkest so I can match or mix anyone. Any recommendations for the best colors to get? I've looked at swatches online but can't decide. Okay. I want to see some responses where people actually talked about the foundations that they actually like. Someone says Black Opal. I have a lot of deeper skin tone friends, and they all concur Black Opal is one of the best. Okay, so this is nothing that she's used personally. Fashion Fair, that's one that I didn't mention. That's a good one. Fashion Fair, Iman, Black Up, Ben Nye, Lancome, Revlon, Black Opal, Krylon, and L'Oreal. I've used Krylon. I would not say they are the best at shading for darker skin tones. Not saying they're the worst, but I would not say that they're one of the best.
I do like Graftopian.
Graftopian is, yeah, I think someone mentioned Graftopian. I do like that. Yes, somebody says hands down Graftopian. Someone says loving RCMA, especially with my adjusters. See, I don't want a foundation that I have to use an adjuster for.
Right.
But that's not saying that, because again, the question says what brands do you feel are shading foundations correctly? So if they're shading correctly, then you don't need an adjuster. But also loving AJ Crimson's line. But there you go. You have a person of color making for people of color. So someone says, well, again, someone said hands down, Graftopian. It says following because I have a darker skin teen with some acne, trying to figure out the best products for her. I like Bobbi Brown and surprisingly a Clinique foundation stick, but I am lighter with yellow undertones and never had acne. Okay, someone says NARS, Makeup Forever Black Opal. Then another person says, I totally agree with Graftopian and Cinema Secrets. Also, mixing different shades or the right adjusters, such as Makeup Forever Flash Palette, Temp 2 adjusters. I worked on a very dark skin model from Sudan yesterday, and I had the darkest shade of Graftopian, so I added just a tiny bit of black from the Flash Palette, and it was perfect. See, again, that doesn't properly answer the question, which brands are shading foundations correctly. If they're shading it correctly, then you don't need those adjusters, especially the Makeup Forever Flash Palette. I honestly get sick of people using that Flash Palette. Definitely don't put any of that into my foundation to put on my skin. No. It's too heavy. Someone mentioned Mayron Célébré Foundation, which is really good. It's good. You do have to do a little mixing with Mayron, but it gives a nice full coverage. Again, Motive Cosmetics Custom Blend Foundation. And again, another vote for Makeup Forever. So there you have it. I think, again, a lot of people are responding based on what someone's told them or just by simply knowing that this line has darker colors. But I just feel like there weren't enough responses based on actual usage of the product. Like you know, who's doing it well. Again, I mean, for freelancing for Bobby Brown for years, I know that Bobby Brown does a great job at, you know, shading foundations correctly for darker skin tones. Black Opal, definitely. I haven't used Fashion Fair in a while, but the few colors that I do have from them are really good, very accurate. Illusions Cosmetics, again, if I have to shout out my own, very accurate on, you know.
And like you were saying earlier, like back in the day, Iman was great. They had a full range of colors, various products. You could get foundations in different formulas, you know, liquid, cream, cream to powder. That a lot of that just doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
But at one time, it just amazes me how when, and I don't want to get into this topic of discussion, but it amazes me how when you have these brands that are specifically for people of color, and when they're owned by or created and owned by someone of color, I feel like it's on the right track. But then when they're bought out, I feel like sometimes the products change, and it's less of what you need, and it's less of what you're looking for.
Right.
You know, some things get kind of shaved down, and then it leaves you needing more from that, from a brand that provided everything that you needed. So it's kind of sad,
right.
But that's another topic.
Right. And, you know, I see a lot of these people in this group, in my kit, and I know some of them aren't like veterans of the makeup industry. And so a lot of times when you see some of these responses, it makes me wonder, have you actually used this product? Because there was a post that Kevin posted in the group, I think it was earlier today, about how a lot of these pro items are now trends. How, like, you know, Ben Nye has been around forever. Pros have used Ben Nye forever, banana powder forever. So now, you know, a lot of these things are turning into trends, like the banana powder and all of that. So, you know, they're going on saying that a lot of the YouTubers and Instagrammers are turning these pro products into trends, like, you know, RCMA and things like that. So now it's like a lot of you've got a good mix of people in these groups. So everybody's talking. So professionals mention certain brands, you know, as a so-called, let's just call them newbies. Newbies can, or Instagrammers or whatever, can take, these brands, find out where these brands are sold, buy these brands, use these brands, demonstrate these brands, and now it becomes a trend. Like banana powder, I don't even want to think about banana powder. I can't even stand to watch somebody buy banana powder. I went into North Costco here in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago to pick up some supplies, and now Ben Nye has a shimmer version of banana and a couple of other powders. And I watched this woman buy, like, you know, two bananas, two of the other ones in the shimmer versions, and then she bought the regular versions, and I was so disgusted I couldn't even look at her anymore. Like, why are you buying this? And the thing is, the store is selling it, although the people at the store complain about the product themselves, but yet, of course, they need to make money. They want to make money, so they're going to sell it. But my thing is, if you're going to sell it, then educate the customer on what they're buying. Don't just sell it without giving them some type of education. But that didn't happen. They just, you know, they just sold it. So just to see people buying this stuff because it's popular. It's a trend. It's a popular trend. And people are using it and misusing it. But yet people are still buying it, and nobody's properly educating them on how to use it and why they're using it.
Right. Well, one of the things that I came across, and I hope this helps somebody out there, but there was someone who posted that they are a client, and I don't know where this person lives, but they have a client who's flying them out to L.A. to do multiple shoots. Their flight and hotel are going to be paid for. And the person said that their hourly rate is $70 an hour. Okay, so they're asking, do I only charge for actual time that I'll be working? And then they're saying, what do I charge for downtime / being away from home, if at all? So the first thing I would say is, basically, before you accept your job, tell your client what it is that you want and need. What it is that you want and need to be able to do the job. Okay, so first, I would never go to them or even ask anybody to pay me for my, I would never phrase it, pay me for my downtime or for me being away from home. Because even if you're in the same city, you know, you're away from your current home situation. So basically, and I understand what they mean by being away from home, but I would never go to anybody and phrase it like, pay me for my downtime, or how does that work? Basically, what you're looking for, sounds like, is a per diem. Something that's going to cover your meal, something that's going to cover your meals, you know, because I look at it as being away from home, I feel like that's being covered when they paid for your hotel. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you're looking for meals, then that's fair for you to ask for, you know? So that's why I said I would phrase it as a per diem. And so what I would say to them would be, well, my rate is $70 an hour, but I also am asking for a per diem. Now, paying you for your downtime sounds like what it's called.
Paying you to go watch the movie? I said paying you to go to the movies?
No. No, but I'm trying to think of the proper term for it. Idle
pay.
Yeah, you're idle, paying for your idle time. If you're going out, and when she says multiple shoots, I'm assuming she's talking photo shoots.
Well, let me ask you this. Is this a job that it's only supposed to last a day? Or is this a job that's for like 2 days or so?
Well, she's saying multiple shoots, so I'm assuming that it's going to be more than one day.
Okay.
So I'm assuming it's going to be more than one day. But my thing is, if it's photo shoots and it's going to be more than one day, they're going to pay you $70 an hour, which is your rate. So you're getting your rate with no problem. They're paying for your flight and your hotel. I think in this situation, it's only fair to ask for a per diem and nothing else.
Exactly.
Because
if they were working like for a whole week, and then they had that weekend, and then they were working the following week, then idle pay I could see would be necessary, because you could be back at home working on the weekend. So I can see if they gave you an idle pay for like a weekend stay, because they're holding you over for the next week.
Right.
But if it's just going to be a couple of days, then no, just a per diem will suffice.
Yeah, because like I said, that's all the details that she gave, so I can't really say exactly what's going on. But you're right. If they're holding you over for the weekend, let's say you're going to shoot Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then you also shoot on Monday, but they're holding you over Saturday and Sunday, then it's fair to ask for like maybe for idle pay, you know, which would probably be something like half of your rate and maybe half of the day. So like maybe since she's being paid, $70 an hour, you know, maybe get paid $35 an hour for 4 hours or something like that.
Okay.
But, you know, but the per diem is fair to ask for.
Gotcha.
Because, like I said, you are away from home, and, you know, sometimes people take jobs and they're starting off taking a job without money. So, yes, you're going to pay for the airfare. Yes, you're going to pay for the hotel. But when I get out there, I have to live, so I have to eat. So that is fair.
Right.
That is fair. Let's see, and then there was another one I wanted to go over quickly. So let's see, it was, okay, there's someone who has a question. Apparently she's a makeup artist, and she's asking, did any of you just bite the bullet and attend cosmetology school to earn a license despite lacking interest in cutting and coloring hair? So basically she's saying, I want to be a makeup artist. I want to go to school to get a license, but I don't want anything to do with cutting hair and coloring hair and all this kind of stuff. She says, the thought of attending cosmetology school has been weighing on my mind for some time now. I would love to gain knowledge. Okay, so she does want to learn hair. I would love to gain knowledge in styling hair, which, from my understanding, isn't thoroughly covered in school nowadays. But I'm thinking about it because I want to cover my behind in the event that states start changing regulations and for when I travel for work. I've asked a couple hairstylists for their point of view but get mixed answers. So this is targeted for my fellow makeup artists that pursued this route. What was your experience when you decided to attend cosmetology school as a makeup artist? So it sounds like to me that they are a makeup artist, and they want to go to cosmetology school to learn some things about hair, so that way when they get on jobs, especially when they're traveling for a job and they're being asked to do hair, they want to cover themselves in the event that different states start changing regulations. So what do you think about a makeup artist attending cosmetology school, even though they're not interested in cutting and coloring hair, but they want to get that license just in case states say for a makeup artist even to touch somebody's head, you have to have a license? Personally,
Basically, they want to have some type of hair education. Is that what you're saying?
Right. They want some hair education, but they don't want to learn about cutting and coloring hair. My point of view is, if you're a makeup artist and you want to learn more about hair, but you don't want to go through all that they do in school, don't go to cosmetology school. Take hair classes for makeup artists. There are plenty of them out there. Just do the research and find them. But her question, what she's saying, though, is that she wants to be covered by a license just in case the states start to change. Now, my opinion, I'm going to take hair classes for makeup artists. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when I get those jobs, I'll do those jobs. If the state that I'm working in decide they're going to change legislation and it's going to require me as a makeup artist to have a license just to do someone's hair, then guess what?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need those jobs. Because,
right.
you know, you know what I'm saying? Me personally,
right.
I don't need those jobs. You know, but I just look at it this way. If you're going to go to school to get a cosmetology license, you're going to have to go through, you might not have an interest in
exactly.
it, but you're going to have to go through and do the cutting, do the coloring of the hair. But basically,
exactly.
all you want to know more about is styling, just take a class for makeup artists.
Right. My opinion personally is suck it up. It doesn't
yep.
matter if you don't like it. There's a lot of things about certain things that you don't necessarily like, but you have to do it anyway to get what it is that you want. If you want to get that hair license, you got to suck it up and you got to do it all. It's a part of the program. You can't skip out on you know, any one part of the program or you just don't get your license. You don't graduate from cosmetology school. You can't sit for the state board. You have to have it all. Whether you want to, you know, specialize in color or not, whether that's your thing or not, you have to go through the whole program. As a makeup artist, what you should do, I mean, if you're just a makeup artist, again, like you said, who want to learn different things about the hair as far as styling and all that kind of stuff, take classes. take different hair classes. Like you said, there are plenty of hair classes for makeup artists out there. So take those classes. But personally, I recommend that every single makeup artist out there get an aesthetics license. If you can, if you're brand new and you're going into makeup artistry, go to aesthetics school. Learn about the skin, aesthetics license, do makeup. It's going to take your career to the next level. It's going to boost you to the next level. It's going to give you so much valuable information. It's going to help you so much more that it really helps take your makeup skills to the next level, knowing and understanding the skin. So as a brand new makeup artist, I would get an aesthetics license. I would get
Absolutely.
An aesthetics license. That's going to cover you in so many areas. And then just take hair classes on the side, here or there. Go to the hair shows. Go to things like that and just absorb all that you can about hairstyling. You know, sit with a hairstylist. Watch what they do. Learn what they do. Ask questions. Practice. Doing all that extra hair stuff is easy, actually. That's going to come easy for you. But just get the basic knowledge and understanding of skin as a part of becoming a makeup artist. That's the license that you need. That's going to be the best thing for you. If you don't want to
yeah.
do hair, don't bother with getting a hair license.
And
if you just want to know enough
thing,
just to get a makeup job where you have to do hair and makeup, then, like I said, take classes. But if you're truly a makeup artist, why are you even worried about that? I wouldn't go through cosmetology school just so that I can get a makeup job where I have to do makeup and hair. Mm-mm.
But listen to this. When you really sit down and you think about it, if the state, I just think when it comes to state licensure, they're only concerned about what's taking place in the salon.
Right.
Now, I really can't see the state even making any changes in regards to that except taking the license away. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because remember, it's a big deal that's was really talked about a lot within the last few years about taking licenses away, and some states think, you know, it's best because even those people who have salons in their kitchens or in their homes, you know, it's more people with businesses. They think it's more money for, in general, for the local economies versus the importance of having a license. So I can't see any states going in that direction where they're going to change a license so that means that now, as a makeup artist doing hair, you're not covered. So I don't
mm-hmm.
think that's an issue. Who knows what they would do, but I don't think that would be an issue. Like you said, the bottom line, get the right license. If you're going to take the time to go to school, go get an aesthetics license. And I do believe somebody commented in that way to get an aesthetics license. I wouldn't even be concerned about the states doing anything that would affect you as a makeup artist doing hair. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, you're wasting your time.
And then the last thing that I wanted to mention, and we kind of briefly talked about it this afternoon when we were with Natasha Nichols, we just talked about, you know, like having makeup artists in one area. Let's just use Atlanta as an example. You know, all the professional makeup artists in the same area coming together on one accord, agreeing to the same rates. You know, and I say
right.
professional, like you're thinking about the makeup artists who are all on the same level with their skill and experience, you know, all agreeing on the same rate. And even like entry-level makeup artists without a lot of experience, those artists agreeing on accepting the same amount, you know, versus artists just randomly deciding to charge certain things. Like, for instance, there are artists who will do the job for free just to get the job versus artists who, you know, have worked and have the experience and, you know, the production or whatever it is that they're working on have the budget to pay them, but just because somebody else who desperately wants the job wants to jump up and say, oh, I'll do it for free or next to nothing, you know, and then that
mm-hmm.
takes the experienced artist out of the equation And now you have artists who, you know, have set rates that are comparable to their experience and their expertise, can't even get paid because there are other people who are jumping and saying, oh, hey, I'll do it for free.
Right.
And then one thing that Natasha mentioned was there are a lot of artists out there who aren't willing to share what their rates are. So I guess her question or what the point she was trying to make is, like, how do we all come together and come together in agreement with what rates we're going to charge when there are some people out there who aren't even going to share their rates?
Right.
So what do you think about that? Like, what do you think well, you know, there could be various reasons, I guess, as to why somebody wouldn't want to share their rates. But how do we come together as artists in a town and say all entry level makeup artists with a little bit of experience, this is what you charge for a photo shoot. This is what you charge for, like, a commercial or an independent film. You know, all those artists out there who have a few years of experience and a moderate level expertise, this is what you charge. And then the experienced pros, this is what you charge. You know, how do we come together and do that?
Well, that's not what you just stated. That's not going to happen. And I say that because it's just different for each medium. But I think the way you get things under control is you just focus on things like production stuff, like, you know, if you're talking commercial production, things like that, you know, like corporate video production, things like that. I think those areas, it's easier to say, let's come together and don't charge any less than this. You know, you can probably charge more than this, but don't charge any less than this. Come up with a basic day rate for most of these shows. I would say a 10-hour day. Come up with a basic day rate for a 10-hour day, and, you know, pretty standard for a basic day rate for a 10-hour day on some type of production, like a corporate, you know, corporate video or commercial. And when I say corporate video, I mean, let's just say Home Depot is doing some type of in-house video. You know, that's what I mean by a corporate video. And you might have a guy, you might have an executive reading off of a teleprompter, okay? You know, because some of these major corporations do in-house videos for training and things like that. So you can sit there for, I mean, it could easily be 2 hours. Or sometimes you may have more than one executive who's coming and reading off of a teleprompter to record a video. So you can be there for anywhere up to 8 to 10 hours a day. Charge a basic day rate for that. For most people, that could be $600 up to a 10-hour day. So if you work 2 hours, that's $600. Okay, but the way you bring people together is if you have relationships with people, and that's the only way that's going to work. So if I know you and you know somebody else and I know somebody else, get those people together that you've worked with before, that you have a working relationship with, who you all can sit down and everybody can bring something to the table as far as their ideas of what a basic rate should be. And once you all agree to that rate, then that's what you go with. So if Home Depot calls you and say, oh, what do you charge for what's your day rate for a corporate video? You can say $600. If they said, oh, okay, you know, I'll give you a call back, then they call me and say, what's your day rate for a corporate video? And I'll tell them $600 for a 10-hour day. And they say, oh, okay, I'll give you a call back. They call the person that you brought to the meeting, and they say the same thing. Then they call the person that I brought to the meeting, and they say the same thing. It's up to them who they're going to choose, because they're going to have to pay the same rate.
Right.
But you can only do that if you have relationships with other makeup artists who's willing to come together and have a true discussion about it. And everybody, you know, add their input on thinking about what it should be. And for something like that, we can't necessarily say, if you've been in the business X amount of years, this is what you asked for. We can't do that for something like that. when it comes to, like, your private clients, like if you're doing weddings, things like that, or if you're doing a prom, at this point, it's like whatever goes. Again, if I'm charging, you know, $300 for a bride, and the next person who's been in the business, you know, a month or two is charging, you know, $75 for a bride, that's that. The clientele that I attract, they're not the clientele that's going to go to that $75 girl anyway. They're the clientele that's going to come to me because they know exactly what they're going to get for that $300. There are people out there who are looking for makeup artists who are charging ridiculously low prices. But what you get is what you get. When you come to me, you get a service for $300.
Right. That's right. Absolutely.
So it's a tough one. But yep, I have one last
really
thing
is.
Before we hop off. Before we hop off, I have one last
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, we have 4 minutes.
Okay. I don't know if we'll make it in 4 minutes, but it's something for everybody to think about. Maybe you can tweet us at @beauty_talk with the hashtag beauty talk or the hashtag beauty lounge with your input. But as far as social media goes, basically I want to know when to post, what to post, or even should I post. There are so many things going on social media, and when you're working in this industry as a professional, whether you work on film and television, whether you're doing photo shoots for magazine covers, video shoots, you name it, what to post, when to post, or should you post. Even if you're doing somebody's wedding, you know, the bride and groom have specifics about what they want to put out there, when they want to put it out there, but it's their wedding. Allow them to be the first to post a photo. Understand you did the work as far as the makeup goes, but when that bride is in her gown and her veil and she has her makeup and her hair done and she walks down the aisle, it doesn't matter if you're back in the bridal room somewhere of a church and you take her picture. Don't post that until she has the opportunity to post her picture. Trust me, it won't be long. It'll be later that night or the next day. She'll post something, but allow the bride to post first before you post the picture. Film and television, what we do. You know, when you're shooting a film or television show, you don't want to post the actor or actress in their costumes. It may give away a storyline. If, let's just say, I don't know, somebody got hit by a car in the show and you did all this great special effects work, but it's a big part of the show. You're taking pictures. You don't want to post that picture of your work to say, oh, look at me, look how great of a job I did, when that's going to give away the story. I think everybody wants to prove that they're so great at what they do, or I work with this celebrity, so that means I'm a celebrity makeup artist. That doesn't necessarily mean that, but whatever you do, sometimes celebrities don't want their photos posted all over the place. So your best thing to do when it comes to social media, if you take the pictures, great. Keep the pictures. When the project comes out, when the project is aired on television, or when the project's at the movie theater, after it shows for the first time, then you release the pictures. Again, after the bride posts her first picture, then you can post your picture. It's just a matter of respect, I think, for the project that you're working on. But this is a whole different, I think we could do a whole show just on this topic alone.
Absolutely.
Because there are repercussions to post. There are also repercussions to posting too soon as well. People have lost jobs because they posted on social media.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back next week, 9 p.m. You want to tell them really quickly who we have on, or should we just wait till next week?
Well, next week we have Dr. Anthony Young, and he's going to talk about his new book, The Age Fix, that comes out a little later this month. So bring all of your skincare questions to the show. You can hit us up this week on social media with your skincare questions. You can go to our Facebook page, Beauty Talk Online Radio page on Facebook with your skincare questions. If you want to talk about Botox, leave the questions out there. Whatever you want to talk about, plastic surgery, leave the questions out there. We're going to touch on it all. So, again, the age fix. Dr. Anthony Young, bring on your questions. We're ready for them. We'll be ready for next week.
Absolutely. All right, well, that's our time tonight. Again, check us out next week, same place, same time. Everyone have a great night and have a beautiful and blessed week. Good night, everybody.
Good night.